Welcome to another episode of Unscripted Small Business. Today, I'm excited to introduce Max Emma, a franchise expert, entrepreneur, and immigrant who has built a successful career from the ground up. Max's journey began over 30 years ago when he immigrated to the U.S. from the former Soviet Union. Despite the early hardships of leaving loved ones behind and learning the English language, Max went on to become a successful entrepreneur and is now the CEO of multiple businesses within the franchising industry. In this episode, Max shares his inspiring story, the lessons he's learned, and key insights into the world of franchising, like the importance of legal considerations and market research. If you've ever wanted to learn more about owning a franchise or just need a dose of inspiration, you won't want to miss this. Let's jump in. Max, it's so wonderful to have you in the studio. Thank you for being here today.
Great, Debbie. Thank you for having me.
Max, I would love for you to just share with everybody kind of a little bit more about your background. I know when we first were messaging, you are an expert in franchising, but tell us more about how you got started in entrepreneurship.
So my journey started 32 years ago when I came to this country from the former Soviet Union, and I just realized that to make a hat, I have to create something and I have to do something with myself. So at that point, I didn't know if it's going to be entrepreneurship, if it's going to be an employment. I don't think I even knew the word entrepreneurship. It wasn't my vocabulary. So, but I got an education and went to work for a very large corporation in San Diego doing corporate finance and accounting. But after about 4 years, I realized that double into employment, it's not for me. My joke is that I was very bad in butt kissing. I was always in line to kiss the wrong butt, and that didn't get me promoted fast enough, at least as fast as I wanted to be promoted. So at the end, I left the organization and joined a small family business, and that was the beginning of my entrepreneurship, I'd say, and I grew it from 3 employees to 96 employees. It was a construction business, and then, of course, everything was doing great, and I was thinking ahead and thinking about 200 employees and 300 employees and becoming the king of the world. But then the recession hit, and they stopped building new homes. We pretty much lost all the revenue. So what happened was I had to go into bankruptcy. And because it was a construction business and construction, you have to personally guarantee most of the things you buy, most of the equipment. I didn't have a choice but to also declare personal bankruptcy. So it's one baby at home and one on the way. It wasn't a fun experience. At this time, I saw this is the end of the world, but luckily it wasn't. I'm glad it worked out. I'm very, very grateful that there were no jobs available at the time because the whole country was in a recession, 08, 09. And because of that, because I was thinking, okay, I'm done. I'm going back and working for somebody for the rest of my life. And I don't know how it would go if I did find a job, but nothing was available, literally nothing. So I didn't have a choice but start a new company again. And this one time it was more successful. And that led to other businesses. So that's, I'm still on my path to master the entrepreneurship. So I'm not done because, you know, one company is leading to another. I'm sure we'll talk about it. I'm a CEO of 3 businesses. They all around the same industry, franchising, but there are 3 completely separate businesses.
Wow. What an incredible story. Tell us about what the hardest part was moving from another country over to America.
Well, I mean, I was 18, so I don't know if it was hard in terms of, I was thinking about monetary values. And again, I was leaving as soon as Soviet Union collapsed, so it wasn't the same country as it is now. Now it's actually 15 countries. But the hardest part was leaving friends behind. And at that time, obviously, internet did not exist. And to call from US back home cost close to $3 a minute. And the minimum wage was $4.25 an hour. So think about it. You have to work an hour to talk a minute to your friends. And so that was hard. So when I was leaving, I saw that this is it, and we'll never see each other again. Of course, times change, and now it's really easy to communicate. And I see my friends on a regular basis. They come here. A lot of them immigrated. Most of them have, actually. So we just had a huge reunion in Europe for my 50th birthday, and I had 20-plus people came from 6 or 7 different countries, and it was a blast. And we do it on a regular basis. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel, but at the time, nobody saw it this way because we were saying goodbye forever. That was like, I remember that. That we were saying goodbye. So that was the hardest part, and the language barrier. So I was studying English in college and then school before, and I had a tutor, but you come here and you don't understand what the hell people are talking about. Because, you know the words, but by the time you remember what this word was, they already passed. They're like 3 sentences ahead, and you're completely so. Talking and understanding, talking wasn't that big of a problem, but understanding people was an issue. So I actually had to create my own system how to practice English. And, I wish I would patent it at the time. I would make a lot of money, but I didn't. Nevertheless, it helped me a lot to actually pick up English really, really fast. And that helped me to get a job. And I worked for Costco, which was a great employer at the time. They paid double minimum wage, all the benefits. They even gave me a scholarship to go to college. So that was like
Wow.
almost 5 years.
That's amazing. Well, your English sounds perfect to me. So,
Well, after 32 years, it better be at the,
tell us some more about that system that you created, because I bet that would help anybody that wants to learn a new language.
Well, funny enough, and you understand why it's not gonna work anymore, but the way I did it, and again, it just came out of the blue, like, hey, how can I learn English faster? And everybody was telling me the hardest part is to understand people on the phone and talk on the phone because, you don't see somebody in front. Obviously, that was way, way long before Skype, Zoom, and WhatsApp. So what I was doing, I was actually, because at home I had my parents, I had two of my grandmothers, so it was like full house. So I would like go out and go to payphone and call a credit card company, any credit card, American Express, Discover, Visa, different banks. And at the time, all the support centers were located in the United States. So I got native speakers speaking to me for 30, 40 minutes, explaining to me why I can't have a credit card because I don't have a credit history. I knew that much, but I still pretended to be dumb. And I was talking for 30, 40 minutes back and forth. And then when they were done with me, I would call another 1-800 number. And I would do 2 to 3 hours of that a day. And the reason I'm saying it's not going to work anymore, because right now the support centers are not in the United States. So most likely you will not get, a native speaker.
That's so fascinating. I never would have thought to do that, but you're right. When you're on the phone with customer service for so long, whether it's a credit card company or really anything these days. So that's awesome. Tell us a little bit about that resiliency that you had to have in order to kind of get through not only moving to the United States, but then filing for bankruptcy. What was that process like?
So moving to the United States, I don't take any credit for that. My parents moved and I moved with them. My older brother already was here in California, so we came to join him. So even if I was against it, which I wasn't, nobody would really ask me. I would just move. And so that has nothing to do with my decision. And it was difficult, but again, it got better with the time, and I got friends, and you know, I got life, and it was fun. Then I went to college, and then obviously it became more fun than in the beginning. In terms of bankruptcy, it was tough. I can tell you that I saw the this is it, because the way I was brought up, that bankruptcy is the bad word. It means you're a failure. It means you can't succeed, that you're not good enough. I mean, a lot of things. So it's mostly negative. And so I was eating myself alive and blaming myself. I can tell you that part of the reason we had to close the company and went to bankruptcy led to opening one of the businesses that I have now, Bookskeeping, which is a bookkeeping company. And the reason it happened, we were growing so fast that we didn't have time to sit down and look at our numbers, okay, and realize that, hey, you know, it's slowing down and we need to do something about it. So I had a bachelor in finance, 4 years of corporate experience. I ran the business with my wife, and she had master's in accounting. So we can't say that we did not understand accounting and finance. We were just so busy, so we didn't have time to sit down, properly look at it, and analyze. And we were saying, well, if we had an outside company doing that, that would be cool. And the idea just pretty much, you know, died with that, because, as I said, we had to support the family. So we started the business again. It was more successful that time. We were able to sell it. But while we had the second business, which was landscape maintenance, we were looking for a bookkeeper in San Diego. We went to get 20 different quotes from 20 different people. Again, internet wasn't where it is now, so it was a bit difficult. I remember meeting some of the people at Starbucks, and some people would talk on the phone, and sometimes at least one, I remember, went to their house, and they had two huge dogs jumping. And I'm like, I'm not sure I like dogs, but, you know, I don't like dogs jumping at me out of nowhere, so maybe I don't want this person to be my bookkeeper. But besides that, we got 20, well, so we went to 20 people. I don't remember how many quotes we got, but they range from $200 to $2,000 for exactly the same scope of work. And my finance background told me that it's a huge fork. You can't have, in a healthy market, you can't have a fork like that for exactly the same scope. So, which meant, in my head, opportunity. And that's how Bookskeeping started. And from the garage, as a part-time gig, because I still had to run the landscape maintenance company. And then got the first employee, and the rest is the history. And then it led to the other businesses.
That's really incredible. And I love that you're touching on something that a lot of business owners, maybe, you know, they're not thinking about that portion of the business at the forefront, especially when you're caught up in the day-to-day operations. You might not be thinking about your budget and where the finances are kind of going. And so I love that you saw this need from your own experience and were able to create a company based off of that need. Tell us more about what Bookskeeping does for entrepreneurs.
So what Bookskeeping was designed to do and what Bookskeeping is doing now is two completely different things. So I always tell people, don't have your mind set on one thing because it's in your business plan or it's in your hat. You know, be open, because you don't know where the road is going to lead you. So when Bookskeeping was designed, it was designed as the company to help small and medium-sized businesses to know their financials so they can make the right financial decisions. And it's still the goal, but over time, by accident actually, we started doing bookkeeping for franchise brands. Literally, it was one brand, one franchisee, and then it led to more and more and more. Right now, Bookskeeping is the preferred bookkeeping provider for over 100 franchise brands in the United States. Sport Clips, Fast Sign, Signorama, and such, a lot of emerging brands that have 2, 5, 10 units. We had one brand that had 2 when they signed with us. They are at 800 right now. Okay. And we probably are doing 100 plus franchisees of that brand. So that evolved. So we still working and doing business for small businesses, but this small business, most of them are franchisees. We don't discriminate. We'll do one-offs, no problem. But again, majority of the clients are the franchise brands. So that change, we went into this direction. We also work a lot for CPA companies doing so-called white label bookkeeping when we do it under somebody else's name, and umbrella. And looking back, I think that came out of, laziness, which laziness, I believe it's a great, great thing because that's when people create new things just so they don't have to work as hard. Because, like, why do I need to sell to 100 clients myself, individual clients, when I can just sell to one franchise brand and they'll do the selling for me? It doesn't mean it's less work for us and it's not as easy process. It takes time. So don't think that this is like, oh, it's fine. I just decided. And then before we know, we're doing it. It took years. And it's still growing. So next week I'm going to Las Vegas for the largest franchise brands convention. So they're expecting 4,000 franchisors in the room. So it's really huge. It's 5, 6 days of, a lot of meetings, a lot of stuff. But usually we come back with 30, 40 new brands as our clients because, we've been going for years. But we were starting doing that at bookkeeping, and I started going to all these conventions, and I really, really liked the spirit in the room when you come and hang out with franchisors. Everybody is helping everybody. Everybody is nice. Like, you literally can walk in the hall and see the CEO of McDonald's, and you can stop and talk to her and then ask, questions, and they actually will stop and spend 15, 20 minutes with you or however long you need. This is like, for me, it was like, wow, everybody's so welcoming. It's totally normal at 10 o'clock at night to see CEOs of two competing brands with 3,000 units each sitting and having a drink and discussing things. And they're like, they are in competition, but they're not, because they all believe we live in abundance, which I 100% agree with. It's enough work for everybody. You don't have to take somebody's share. I mean, you don't have to grab it. It's enough work for all of us. It's enough market for everybody. If you have this mentality, in my opinion, you will be very successful. So being around these people, that's my little, probably longer answer than I was looking to give you, but being around these people gave us an idea to become franchisors ourselves. So now bookkeeping is a franchisor. So we're selling bookkeeping franchises in the United States. And our franchisees, in turn, offer bookkeeping to small and medium-sized businesses they offer bookkeeping to small and medium-sized businesses.
That is so awesome. As a certified franchise executive, what do you think are some important things for businesses to consider when they might think about franchising their business?
Do due diligence of your own business. Do the homework of study. It's a process. It seemed easier than it actually was when we started doing that. So it took a while to write all the legal agreements and get everything in place. So when somebody is considering franchising their business, they definitely should talk to somebody who either done it before or who offers the consulting. Don't try to do everything yourself. I mean, I'm big proponent of ChatGPT. I love it, but I don't think that just using AI you would be able to franchise, because human factor is huge. And I tell our franchisees right now that when you go with bookkeeping, you're not only going to learn what to do, you're going to learn what not to do, because we made so many mistakes. I wouldn't call it mistakes. It was learning experiences, okay? I'm grateful for all of them, but nevertheless, we did them. So now, instead of somebody trying to figure out how to do it themselves, they have a playbook. That's exactly what franchise does. Any franchise A franchise gives you a playbook how to operate a successful business if you follow certain rules. And then the same applies to somebody who wants to buy a franchise, because again, I'm now not only selling the bookkeeping franchises, that led to the third business. I think once you start, you can't stop if you're a true entrepreneur, in my opinion. And then, so the third business that I'm a CEO of, it's the franchise broker. So if somebody is not a good match for bookkeeping, we help them to choose over from over 600 different franchise brands in the United States, ranging from bookkeeping to pizza shop to insurance agency to medical office. You name it, literally anything and everything you can think of. And because I did go, went back to school and got my certified franchise executive and took all the tests and been around franchising for so long, I think I know enough to be an asset for somebody. And what people don't realize, if they want to buy a franchise and they use broker like myself, our services are completely free, like zero. We don't charge anything, because if they end up buying a franchise, then we get commissions from a franchise brand. So bookkeeping-based commission if somebody comes from another broker. But, you know, I don't charge anything hourly. I don't charge anything for a retainer to help people to make the right choice.
What advice do you give to people who are looking to purchase a franchise when you're talking with them and kind of helping them find the business that is the appropriate fit?
So, you know, my first meeting with people who want to buy a franchise is actually asking questions, talking about themselves, where they want to be in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. What do they like? Part of the interview, we send them some personality test, so we can see what people like to do, because a lot of folks who come in and want to start the business, they mistakenly mix hobby and what they're good at with business, and they always argue it's not the case. You can be the best cook and your pizza could be the best pizza you can ever try in your life. And I totally agree that homemade food most likely is way, way better than what you have at the restaurant, okay? But it's one thing to cook one pizza for your family that you can share with the bottle of wine at night. Another one is to do 100 of them in an hour that all come out exactly the same, that, you know, you can produce, you can scale, then you can deliver, and there are a lot of different things. So you don't have to be a cook to run a pizza shop, okay? You just have to be a good manager. You have to be a good manager, because there is a process, what you need to do, what you need to do. Yeah, I guess you have to like being around food and being in the kitchen for so many hours, but you don't have to be a great cook. If you like to paint, it doesn't mean that you can run a baking business, because, you know, it's not being art at some point. It's art when you pick the colors, which is like a small portion, but then delivering it has nothing to do with the art. This is production. So that's part of education that I give and my team gives when we talk to candidates. Again, this is just trying to figure out what they want and breaking the myth, because people really think, well, I like to cook, so I'm going home in the restaurant. I'm like, wait. Do you realize what comes with that? I'm not saying restaurant is a bad business. It's great business. I mean, look, there are so many of them. But also you have to know your market. You have to know where you want to open. Like if, let's say, you are in the new development that already has pizza shop on each corner, maybe it's not a good idea to come up with another brand and open like literally on the corner, you know, across the street, because it's going to be hard to break through. But when you are the first one, or it's actually missing, so market research is huge. That's why it's not like a one meeting deal. We meet 3-4 times before we narrow down to the industry. Then we figure out which ones are available in the area. And then after that, we present it to candidates and introduce them to a franchisor. So, really, my advice would be just follow the system. Don't try to rush it again, and don't let like success stories that you read to defer you to a pathway that is not yours. I mean, yes, we see how successful Amazon is, but are you really going to try to create the competition to Amazon right now? I'm not saying it's impossible, but just if you want to do it, be prepared to invest billions of dollars before anybody will even notice.
What are the main differences that you've noticed from just a regular startup type of business versus owning a franchise?
The playbook, our playbook, or we call it brand manual for bookkeeping, is close to 900 pages. It has everything from like beginning to the end, how to hire people, you know, what to say, the scripts, how to do the work, what CRM to use, and a lot of different things. When you start your new business, you pretty much have to figure it out on your own. So I'm not saying that you cannot start and create and run a successful bookkeeping business. Of course you can, but it's going to take you time. So let's say it takes you 2 years versus if you start franchising, you get there, you know, way fast. It's called opportunity cost in finance, meaning, let's say it's a year and a half that you gain. How many potential clients you can get in this year and a half? And, you know, you're going to be ahead of your competition if you take two average people opening, let's say, bookkeeping business. One is franchise, one is not franchise. And that applies for everything. Yes, luck is a huge part of it. How hard are you working? How good you are with following the system? Because I can tell you one thing. In franchising, if you want to be a franchisee, you have to be coachable. You have to be somebody who follows certain rules. Yes, franchises give a lot of freedom, but a lot of things are actually, scripted, and you can't get away from that. For example, the colors of bookkeeping is red, white, and black. So you cannot create and make it yellow or make it blue because it matches colors of your arms. It's impossible. If somebody like, no, but I see it to be different way, then probably it's not going to work. You know, bookkeeping does not provide a tax work because we get a lot of work from CPAs. So if you want to buy a bookkeeping franchise and start offering taxes, you cannot do it under bookkeeping name. You can open a second business and run it in parallel, and we have some franchisees who are doing that and very successful, but you cannot do it under bookkeeping umbrella. So you have to be coachable. You have to be ready to be part of the system. Sometimes just hear no, and you cannot do it. But again, a lot of great ideas come from our franchisees, and then we are listening and we are adjusting. So it's like our brand manual is a live document. We are updating it all the time. And we started the franchise 5 years ago. A lot of technology that exists now did not exist.
I love the structure of franchising, especially as somebody who's more of the creative mindset, and I sometimes lack the logical part. I love that with a franchise, it seems like you get that, like you said, that manual that gives you all of that information on how you exactly need to run the business, which is really awesome. What is kind of the startup cost of a franchise? I know that there are obviously lots of costs involved with franchising, and they can range depending on what type of franchise that you purchase. But is there kind of like a ballpark realm that somebody needs to kind of have saved up in order to buy a franchise?
So, I mean, there is no ballpark because every franchise is different. You can open a franchise for less than $25,000, or you can spend over $1 million to open a franchise. Because, you know, the question becomes franchise fee. They vary from, I don't know, 20 on average, yeah, to average $20,000 to $50,000-$60,000. But if it's a restaurant and you have to build the building and you have to buy land and you have to actually decorate it and everything else and get the equipment, it can get close to $2 million if you're just renting a space and but still have to do the all the tenant improvements. It can get to $1 million because, look, there are a lot of fancy restaurants, very, very fancy steakhouses that are franchises. You go in and you see expensive furniture and glass and wood. I mean, franchisor paid for it. I'm sorry, franchisee paid for it with their money to build it. So it's not necessarily the franchise fee alone. But for example, when you buy, I'm using bookkeeping only because I know there are a lot of different businesses that have to be bookkeeping and be a marketing agency. You don't need to have any real estate. You can run the business from home. So this cost is very minimal. So you have to take this thing into consideration. There are government money available. You can actually get some money through SBA program for some of the brands are approved by SBA. You can do like for your 401k conversion. There are a lot of different options. So you don't have to have the money yourself. Of course, you know, the banks would run your credit history and you have to have some money or you have to have a great good credit history to run the business, but it really varies. I don't think it should be the cost issue because let's say you want to open three of the fancy steakhouses and it's going to cost you, you know, $6 million, for example, you probably can finance most of it. And because there's going to be banks that are willing to give you a loan if you're willing to take the risk and personally guarantee it. So that's why I don't think you should look at the cost first. You should look at what's your availability? What do you like to do? Yes, budget is a huge thing. So if you have $100,000 and you don't want to borrow any money, then definitely most of the restaurants are out of the questions. But there are a ton of businesses that you can open under 100K.
So let's say I buy a franchise and I'm not using bookkeeping, so the business is doing terribly and I'm facing bankruptcy. Are there any effects towards the parent company that you franchised? Does that affect them in any way, or is it only solely me that it affects now that that company is essentially mine?
Oh, it affects franchisor a lot because franchising is a very, very regulated industry in the United States. So you have to report everything. You have to report any lawsuits, you have to report bankruptcies, you have to report store closures, you have to report everything every year, and you have to go through the audit with a CPA firm every year. And it's always like they require a lot of backup stuff and asking a lot of questions. I mean, I already have enough gray hair, but it's going to be more because we're going through the audit right now, so I know. But it's a process. Every franchise has to do it. So it definitely affects franchisor. So I can tell you from hanging out with franchisor and being one myself, we will fight really hard to make sure it's not happening. So we'll do everything in our power to give our franchisors to help the franchisees. Because I don't want somebody to buy a business and not be successful because, you know, the more franchisees are happy, the more new franchisees I'm going to get. Because when you buy a franchise, you have an opportunity to talk to existing franchisees. And you do that outside of franchisor press. So I have no idea what my franchisees are telling potential candidates about the brand, about myself. They're free to do whatever they like. The only thing I see, is this person coming back and buying my franchise, or are they just, you know, saying I'm not interested? So that's why, you know, happy franchisees means growing system. If they're not happy, you're not going to be able to grow.
What do you think leads to failure in franchising the most? Is it not doing that market research on the forefront?
Look, a lot of things can lead to it. There are a lot of outside factors that beyond our control. So I remember before COVID, the hottest industry in franchising was gyms. So literally, they trade show I was telling you about that I'm going to this in the next week. We had one February of 2020 in Florida. So the country wasn't shut down, but out of expected 3,500 people, 1,000 people didn't show up. So it was like considerably smaller. Something was going on around the world and everybody was watching the news. Hey, are we going to get hit with it or not? Nevertheless, they still did it. No masks at the time, no cases, reported cases in the United States. So it was fine in this regard. So fitness was the huge thing. Every second brand was fitness. And everybody was investing money, private equity. And guess what happened? It got shut down. So some brands still made it, and they made it out very, very strong. But right now, you don't see a lot of new fitness brands starting on the market. Not as many as before. So that's outside of anybody control at this point. Okay. So can you blame a certain franchisee who just literally opened a month before COVID for not making it and closing the doors? Not really. They did everything they could, just, you know, wrong time. But one thing that is definitely within the control of a franchisee is to follow the system. Follow the system. You have to make sure that the person who buys the franchise is coachable and will agree to follow the system. You can use your creativity on, you know, get some marketing ideas, how you get new clients. Please do that. But, you know, when you run the business, you should run it the way the company tells you to run, because there are some proven points. And if you disagree, talk to me. Like, I'm all ears. And again, there were some cases when my franchisees just gave me some ideas that I just didn't think about. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. So let's pilot it and see if that's going to work or not. I mean, there are a lot of stories. I forgot which brand, one of the fast foods, they did not, they were not selling ice cream. They were just doing burgers and fries, and that's it. And one franchisee in the market, you know, in the South, I read the story. They just decided to sell ice cream. They didn't ask the permission and they started doing it. And the franchisor got so pissed because, like, we're not supposed to do it. And then they traveled to their office and they see that 50% of their revenue is from ice cream. Okay. And they just, what if we're going to introduce it? And now this is one of the hardest thing for this, if you can say hardest about ice cream, but it is one of the hardest for this particular brand. But, you know, so it came out of accident because somebody was looking for opportunities. That's not the right way of doing it. This person should have come and talked to the franchisor first. But nevertheless, that created the whole market for the franchise. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That kind of brings me to another point that I want to touch on, which is legalities with franchise. Do you find that there are more legalities that business owners need to kind of take into consideration when owning a franchise over just a startup type of business?
Well, legality, I said, because it's very regulated, there are a lot of things that you cannot do what you would be able to do if you sell one-off business. So, for example, we cannot give any predictions. We can show historical numbers, but we don't have to. And we meaning franchisors, control what numbers to show. But we cannot disclose anything else outside of that. So when people come to me like, hey, when I'm going to break even, I can't even tell, well, I think you'll do it in so many months. Or I think it'll take you, you know, that many years. And I think you're going to be making that much money in, you know, a year and a half. Whether if I sell my own bookkeeping business, I can just one off. I can say whatever I want. You know, I'm not regulated. Nobody's going to hold me to that. It's like when you do financial investment. They cannot tell you how much money you're going to make in the next year or 2 years or 5 years, okay? They can show the historical data, but they can't talk about it. So again, franchising is very regulated, and that's the legality of it. The franchise agreement is pretty big in terms of number of pages. But look, it's a 10-year agreement, so my sales director, he's joking that that's longer than, you know, his first marriage. I mean, this is really, 10 years is a big, it's a long time. So when franchisees think they interview us, we also interview them. And we've said no many times. Look, I want to sell franchise to somebody who I'll be happy to hang out with and, you know, spend time with. I just came back from another trade show in Vegas, and I had dinner with my franchisees there. I had a really great time. 3 weeks ago, I was in Northern California, and I had franchisees there. We went to lunch, and we had a lot of fun. And then we talked about business a little bit, but after that, it went into family, into different aspects. You never know, but it was so good to know them and their families. And we talked about everything. Just instead of 1 hour blend, I think it took like 2.5 hours because we were just having a great time. And that's the people I want to hang out with. You know, they become part of the family. When somebody buys franchise, bookkeeping franchise, I always tell them, welcome to the family. And I really mean it because I spend more time with them than I spend time with my own kids.
You mentioned 10 years. Is that the typical length of time for somebody to kind of own their franchise before it's up for that renewal process?
Well, usually, you know, it's a contract. I mean, no franchisor will give you a right to buy it, try it for a year, and then you leave. And then what? You're going to open your own burger shop in the same corner and under a different name. So that's for both protections, but also protects our franchisees as well. Because, look, the people who come buy bookkeeping franchise right now, or any franchise for that point, they'll be paying higher fees than people who came 4 or 5 years ago because they're under different franchises. So that's a protection for franchisees as well. But look, if you sign the 10-year agreement, it doesn't mean that you have to stay in business for 10 years. You can sell it in 1 year. You can sell it in 2 years. And historically, you get more money for a franchised business than for one-off because there is a system and there is a national support. So a lot of people are in the business of studying the franchises, getting them to a certain point, and then selling them.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that you would be able to do that under the contract. So then does the franchisor now create a new contract with the person that you're selling the business to? How does that work?
Well, they go on your existing contract. But we create a new agreement, and franchisor reserves the right to say no. Because again, for the same reason. But I have to have very good reason to say no. So if the person is wrong for the market, or they own 3 competitive businesses and they don't want to give them up, then yes, I'm going to say no. Or if the person lives in another country and not planning to come and do anything and doesn't want to have a general manager, then I'm also going to say no. But why would I say no for somebody who's eager to buy? And then, by the way, a franchisee can sell it for whatever money they want to sell. I mean, there are cases where people were opening 10, 15 units of the same brand, building them, and then selling it north of $15 million, you know, just because that's their investment strategy. They buy it, they grow it, and then they sell it as a package to private equity. So there are a lot of different opportunities. You absolutely can sell to anybody you choose with franchisor's approval. You can hire a general manager, and that becomes like a passive income for you. There are a lot of different opportunities. You're not obligated to work in the business for 10 years. As a matter of fact, I'm looking for franchisees for looking after a certain time to work on the business and not in the business. I don't want anybody to buy a job. This is an expensive job.
I love this, Max. I've learned so much about franchising from our conversation, and I know our listeners are learning so much too, which leads me to your website, and also just how do people get in contact with you if they want your coaching or advice on buying a franchise?
So, because we do different things, and again, I want to be very clear, I'm not the one doing all of that. I have teams in every of the business, and without them, we would not be successful. Without them, we would not be able to grow. Without them, I wouldn't be able to open new businesses because you can't do it by yourself. That's, by the way, a huge mistake when people are like, well, I'm the smartest kid on the block, so I'm going to do everything myself. There are only so many hours a day that you can work. And I'm big proponent of work-life balance. I actually call it life-work balance because life comes first. Because if you're a dad, who cares about work? So I created a website, which is like really my virtual business card. People can go there and choose why they want to talk. Do they want to buy a franchise? Do they want to talk about bookkeeping franchise? Well, they need bookkeeping for their business. So it's called Franchise with Max. It's franchisewithmax.com. You can just go there and decide why you want to talk. Everybody still ends up talking to me after my team, you know, talks to them and answers some initial questions, but you know, it's still me. So Franchise with Max really means you end up talking to myself. So franchisewithmax.com would be the best way to get a hold of me.
That's wonderful, and I'll be sure to link that in the show notes for all of our listeners out there. So to wrap up our show today, there's always a question that I like to ask every guest that I have on the show, and it's kind of one of those fill-in-the-blank Mad Lib type questions. So the question is, you have to blank to blank.
I guess you have to be in the moment in order to be successful in the future.
Oh, touch on that a little bit more. Can you elaborate?
Sure. And I'm guilty as charged. I was always so busy to either eating myself alive for making mistakes in the past or dreaming about the future until I realized I can't control either. I can't control what already happened, and I definitely don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. For different reasons, my control, beyond my control, and who knows. But I definitely can control today, and I can control the moment. And look, I personally love to travel. And instead of waiting till I'm 65 or 67 when I retire, I want to do it now, because God knows what's going to happen. And if I'm going to make it, planning to, but who knows. So I'm doing it now. I don't want to wait 5, 10, 15 years before I get to it. So that's what I mean, believing in the moment. Like, I'm learning, I'm practicing, I'm mastering it. I'm making sure that now when I get a cup of coffee, I actually go on my patio and enjoying the view while I'm drinking the coffee. Because before it was like coffee, computer, everything. So I didn't even know, you know, color of my coffee. I didn't know if milk was there, if I had sugar. Who knew it? Just boom, you're done. And so I'm learning to live in the moment. And it's a great feeling because you're enjoying it and you understand why you're doing everything you're doing, because you're doing it for this particular moment.
I love that. That's so beautifully said. And I think just finding that the little moments every day, that the joy, and I think that's ultimately why we're here, to just enjoy life. Thank you so much, Max. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode with Max Emma. I hope you found his insights on franchising as valuable as I did. If you're interested in opening a franchise and would like more personalized guidance, check out Max's website featured in the show notes. And if you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. And as always, feel free to share this episode with anyone that you think could benefit. We'll see you next time.